Good evening, and you're very welcome to a fairly action-packed Women's League of Ireland podcast this evening. We're going to be talking managerial changes with Tommy Hewitt. He's on board with us in a few moments to talk about his departure from Athlone, which of course was announced last week. We're going to be talking Women's World Cup squad. It was announced earlier today. Do you agree with the decisions made by Vera Powell? Do you disagree with who she has selected for that 23-person / 26-person, depending on how you look at it, squad for Australia and New Zealand? We'll also be talking all things Avenir Sports All-Ireland Cup. And as if that wasn't enough, rebranding in Wexford, we're going to have Alan Brown on, their chairperson, talking to us all about that. And we'll also be taking a look inside Kerry FC, new boys in the League of Ireland. But now, from next season, they're going to be the new girls in the women's divisions as well. They're entering an under-17 team, along with Mayo. We're going to be joined by their head of academy, Damien, later in the show. But as always, Aaron, it's yourself and myself to go through everything. I don't know how we're going to fit this into the hour.
Be some job, all right. But listen, it's always good to have an action-packed show. Next couple of weeks are going to be manic. We already know that. So let's roll with the punches.
Absolutely. Well, the first of those punches may not be thrown by our first guest on the show. It's a chance for us to get to catch up with the former now Athlone Town manager, Tommy Hewitt. He, of course, left the club last week. Tommy, you're very, very welcome to the programme.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be on.
I suppose we invited you on, we tried to get you on last week's show, but it was all very last minute in terms of the announcement of your departure and the actual broadcast of the show. So we had you set up from last week. Since we've seen who your replacement is, we'll get on to that maybe in a moment. But first of all, maybe you might talk to us just about that decision, how much influence you had in it. Was it your choice? Was it the club's choice? Was it a bit of both? And I suppose how you came to the fact that you're no longer the manager.
Yeah, look, first and foremost, it wasn't an easy decision on my behalf. But look, obviously in sport and definitely in football in this country, there's always reasons behind everything. But for the moment, I'm gonna keep them close to my chest. You know, I really, really enjoyed my time with the girls. They were fantastic. It's given me memories for a lifetime here. And yeah, look, it was a sad time for me, but it's one. Every morning I wake up, I'm very contented with it I've made, and all I can do is wish the girls and Kieran the best of luck going forward.
When did you sort of realise that maybe the time was coming to an end, though, Tommy?
Sorry, Aaron. No, I think I got a bit of that question. Was when did I realise that the decision was done there?
Or when it was coming? When did you realise sort of it was going to happen in terms of your, you know, was it something you seen coming, or was it something that you? You know, was it a quick decision or how, you know?
Well, it wasn't an easy decision, put it that way. But, you know, in terms of seeing it coming and that, again, you know, I had my reasons and I still feel very contented in them reasons. And, you know, as I said, that's something, and again, I know it's the boring answer, but something that it will stay close to me and my family for until it really has to come out.
We've had you on the show before. We've chatted a lot on the show, both in the presence of you and your former players, I suppose, about the success you had through 2022. I suppose this season maybe hasn't quite lived up to the standards that ye set in terms of results last year. What's your thoughts on how the season has gone for you so far? Because there has been some gems in there, even with maybe the overall lack of competitiveness at the top of the hill.
Yeah, look, last season was fantastic without winning anything, you know, for a team that I built really from the ground up. You know, the likes of myself, Darren Whelan, Anto Fay, Davey Harrington, you know, we really, really put a shoulder to the wheel, and we had a bunch of girls that bought into everything that we asked them to do. And that's why we broke into that top four or five of the top teams in the country last season, and we were hoping to push on. And you know, there was a decision made early doors which I was on board with to change the playing style, and look, it was good, and the girls really responded well to it. And like I said earlier in the week, I was talking to one of the local press, when you lose the spine of your team, it's going to be always hard to replace them. And the girls that come in, it was taking them a while to kind of get used to me, I suppose, as a coach, and you know, the structure and how I wanted to play. And some of the performances were excellent this season. I have to credit the girls on that. I was looking at the stats during the week. You know, apart from maybe one game, you know, we dominated possession, goal, shots and targets. But the big thing for me is, and the reasoning behind why we probably are not up there, is we weren't brilliant in both boxes. We made too many mistakes in our own box, and we weren't clinical enough in the opposition box. That's football, that's sport. Last year, everybody seen it, we were getting them wins when nobody expects us to get it, because we were very mean in our own box. And then you had the likes of Emily and these, you know, these girls who were playing the other box. And, you know, we missed that this season while I was there. But again, that's sport.
You talk about this season, though, Tommy. I know people say it's technically a preseason competition, but to see Athlone win some silverware at senior level with the President's Cup, though, considering where they were when you took the club at the start, when they came into the National League, that must fill you with pride, though.
Oh, Aaron, look, definitely an honour. He won a good few things with clubs and at senior level. And, you know, a lot of them girls probably, I hope to do, but probably will never win anything at senior level again. And to win a cup and have been the inaugural, you know, President's Cup, you know, you'll go down in history for that. And it's history for Athlone as well. And, you know, for the girls, and immensely proud. And, you know, that's something that will live with me forever. And, you know, it's nights like that you have to cherish. And yeah, you're right. Look, it was only a pre-season game, but I was actually looking back on the game there during the week, and, you know, to see the reaction of the players when they scored the penalties, it wouldn't tell you it was a pre-season game, even the Shells players. So, yeah, look, immensely proud. And it's a night I'll never forget.
In terms of, I suppose, last season's successes and this year, have you kind of been a victim of your own success in terms of the expectations both around the club and around the league?
Yeah, you could say that, Brett. You could say that, you know, you are really, but like everybody knows that's involved in sport, that to do 1 year is fantastic. Do a second year, it's unbelievable, and it's harder the second year. But as I said, when you lose the spine, you lose Niamh Coombs, you lose Jess Hennessy, you lose Melissa O'Kane, and you lose Emily, like, that's the spine of your team gone. And it's hard to replace them players. At the time, you kind of go into it, you feel numb at the time, and you think, listen, don't worry, you know, you're trying to galvanize the group that you've there, and you'll say, look, we get through this and we replace them. But as I said, you know, like, if you look at our back three this year, the only one that really was Kayleigh Shine that was kind of in and out of that team last year. And from our goalkeeper to the other two players, you know, they were new, and it's very hard to replace that. And yeah, look, I'm not making excuses. I was the manager. I put the team out onto the pitch, and I take full responsibility for results, good and bad. And it just didn't happen for us while I was there. And these things happen in football.
Was that part of the reason, though, Tommy, when you lose the spine, that you maybe change the style of play a little bit? Because last year, as you say, you were one of the meanest teams in terms of getting results about you. I think you become the story of the podcast the last 7 weeks of the season. And every week we come on, we talk, Athlone are going to do this, Athlone are going to do that. And we were loving it. But like, the thing is, you were getting results, you were grinding out results where people were saying, oh, you're not going to get it. You just kept grinding them results.
Yeah, because there was a belief, an inner belief within the team that I had built up with the coaches over the last, I suppose, two seasons. And them girls, like, they knew me inside out. I knew them inside out. And, you know, I won't say they'd die for you because that's a bit dramatic, but they definitely would have, you know, done anything in terms of playing that we asked them to do. And every single one of them knew the roles inside out. And when you bring in new players, you know, especially girls who haven't played in the league before, it's very hard for them, you know, to get used to a manager within the space of 3 or 4 months and try and implement his style. And, you know, when I was asked to change the style, you know, one thing I have learned from the experience is I have to be true to myself, and I'm not everybody's cup of tea as a manager. And I think, briefly, and I think I'm not having to go at you, one thing you said last year was, look, you said hats off, but you said that loan style isn't great. But to be honest with you, I didn't care because we were winning.
It was effective.
Absolutely. But one thing I probably should have been a little bit more truer to myself and stuck to my core values and beliefs in the team. And I didn't do that. And I was just disappointed me as a manager. But look, the experience has made me better for it. And that's something that I'll carry with me now as well when I go on another journey.
thinking back, I suppose Aaron asked you about the pride you felt in what you achieved last year, and I think anyone who's looking in from the outside, and yeah, you're right, I didn't think it was pretty, but it was super effective at getting results and getting through competitions and putting you in that competitive position through most of those competitions last year. But when you look back at kind of the players that you've brought into the fold and the players who've come through that system, who've gone on to be in the shake-up for Ireland, reckon, and I know Jessica Hennessy gets mentioned every now and again. Emily Corbett's been in and out of squads here and there as well. It must be, you must be hugely proud, again, to use that word, of being part of that pathway for those players.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, you're talking about, you know, when we came in at the very start, like it was a real sharp kind of, you know, you have to get a team together, and you know, two players to stick out for me is Myrne Devaney and I know, and Roisin Molloy. Like Darren Whelan, who was with me at the start, he had his finger on the pulse in terms of young players around the place, and he spoke to me about this girl, Myrne Devaney. Now I would have heard of her, but I would have never seen her, and we invited her down training. I know, I could see you smiling because, you know, we stole her really from Sligo, but
Both of them.
But to see them two players progress and get better week in, week out, and become really, really standalone players. And, like, you know, you're speaking about Ireland there, and I mentioned it during the week, and I'll stand by this. Roisin Molloy, to me, should have been in the home base training squad, because where that girl has come from in Sligo, and you know what she's like, Brett. She's like, she is just one-on-one, there's nobody like her. She can take on players, she can cross, she's learning the game. It's something that I think, you know, she's going to get better and better, and I'm excited to see her where she goes. But, like, for me, Laurie Ryan, who's come in, who played Gaelic football for most of her life, played a small bit of soccer, was out of the game for probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and for her to come in and lead that team and be such a captain for them girls and myself is immense. And to see her performances week in, week out, she's the unsung hero of that team in my eyes, because, like, she suited me down to a T, because we talk about football not be pretty, but she gives so much protection to that back three and the goalkeeper, and also then her ball skills, her game intelligence got better with every single game, and to me she's been immense as well. And look, you see Emily as well, who came through the system, and Jess, like, people don't know about Jess. Jess was playing junior football in Mullingar when I rang her, and to see her journey now is incredible, and she's gone on to do good things with Rovers as well. It's fantastic, Rush. It's fantastic.
I want to pick you up on just one or two things you said there about the Gaelic football reference, because it's the one thing about it alone over the last few seasons that has really been kind of unique to your squad, is that girls have been comfortable moving even over the same weekend from your squad to whatever county or whatever club Gaelic they're involved in. All the girls you've just mentioned, Myrne Devaney with Leitrim, Roisin Molloy is in and out of the Sligo squad from time to time. I know Aoife Haran was also there when she was with you. She's at Sligo now, and Laurie Ryan, and there are others. Mo Nerney is with Laois. Emily Corbett had played with Laois as well. So you probably have the highest percentage of girls who've played at a high level of Gaelic football. How difficult was it to juggle all of those balls and keep them all in the air? And is it a model that could work for the league going forward?
Absolutely. It's just about having an open mind, being very trustive of the players. Obviously, communication is a massive thing. Like, listen, I know, and we've all seen it in sport, you know, whether it's Gaelic, soccer, basketball, camogie, you'll get managers that will just want the player all to themselves. And the approach I've taken, and I always will take, if a player is able to go and play both sports, both codes, and able to do them well, then I have no issue with that. But if it becomes an issue, if the player is tired, or, you know, if they're falling out of love with either sport, well, then it's time for a conversation. But look, we talk about Laurie. Laurie used to play with us on a Saturday, and then go and play for Clare on a Sunday, and then she'd be right as rain for training on Tuesday. And that's all being professional and looking after yourself. But the communication is key. And, like, who am I or anybody else, unless you know, they're on a massive contract, to tell any player what they can and can't do? And I'd like to think that I got good respect from players for that. And it worked for us a treat last year. this year there wasn't as many. Laurie only went back late to clear, and Roisin was kind of in and out with Sligo. I don't know if she's really played, but I know you have Shauna and Kate who play with Galway. But we understood that before they signed for the club, and the communication is the big thing, Breffni. And you know, it's fantastic because at the end of the day, I know this is a soccer podcast, but Gaelic football is our national sport.
Yeah.
You know, that's our GAA, I should say, is it? And we have to respect that. And, you know, I was involved with myself with my local club here as well in GAA. And, you know, I love both games. And, you know, it's all about understanding, I think, and communication.
It's absolutely refreshing to hear that. Like, as Breffni didn't tell you, I'll be standing on Hill 16 on Sunday watching the Dubs myself. And, like, when you hear that, and, like, I've spoke to players below of yours, and the admiration they give for the fact that you allowed that dual player, you didn't sort of push back and say, hold on, no, we can't do one or the other. But Tommy, I want to talk a little bit about the recognition you got last year. Like, although Breffni said at times your football wasn't pretty, you went on runs where you went 6 games unbeaten. You'd never beaten teams like Shells. You'd never beaten teams like Wexford. Never beaten Pima before last year. To go on them sort of runs, come so close, and end up with, even as well, with the Manager of the Year award. Like, talk to us about that from a personal point of view as well.
Well, look, to be honest with you, and even now when, you know, I look at the award and I say to myself, like, you know, was that real? Did that happen? You know, it's probably once in a lifetime that that will happen to someone like me. And, you know, obviously the credit has to go to the players and my backroom staff. You know, they obviously were the ones that drove that. And even when I got the award, I couldn't believe when your name was called out. It was one of those moments, like, surely it has to be Noel King because he's after winning a double. And, you know, like, that's, you know, it's something that, you know, can never be taken away from you. But, yeah, look, and even, Emily to get Player of the Year, the 3 girls and Team of the Year. Look, I'm not going to say little old that lone and, you know, people feel sorry for them, but I think we broke the mold and we gave other teams a little bit of hope that it can be achieved, you know, over the next couple of years. And, you know, to go up that night to the awards and see so many players from our team being recognised, it was mind-blowing. And, you know, to go away, come away with that award for myself, you know, I always say it's not my award, it's myself and Anto. Like, you know, we're a double act. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, look, to be honest with you, Aaron, I'll probably look back in a couple of years' time, but, you know, I hope I'm not finished, and I hope that I give myself another chance over the next couple of months or years to win more awards like that. But, you know, the credit has to go to the team.
Just before you do, Breffni, just before you do, do you remember what I said to you after the cup final, Tommy? I said to you there was big recognition coming to Athlone.
Yeah,
and I was right. I was right, because the thing is, a lot of it was deserved, and it wasn't just as if it was a token gesture because you've done so well. Like, the fact of the year before, you're finishing, I think it was third bottom, and then you're in the fight for the league and finishing second in the league. I think that's the credit, why the credit went to Athlone last year, because you went from so low down to a record wins for your team to then being in the fight up until the very end of the season.
I think as well, just on that note, to be able to convince girls to spend a season driving up and down to training when there's a brand new club on their doorstep, multiple girls last year, was a huge achievement, because a lot of people will go, I'm not getting paid for this. I can play here in the league for 20-minute travel time and little cost, but I want to go to Athlone. That speaks volumes for where the club is. Finally, and I will let you go, I'm not going to ask you about your successor because that's not fair, but very quickly, what's next for Tommy Hewitt? Will we see you back in the game shortly?
Oh, listen, like, I'm not going anywhere. And, you know, I just want to, can I take this opportunity to say that the support that I've got publicly and privately has been, it's blown me away. You know, I have got a few offers, in fairness, and stuff that I thought I'd never, you know, never come on my door. And in the GAA world as well, I've got a few offers there as well. And, you know, at this moment, my mind is just, it's all over the place. I think it'll take a bit of time, but one thing I can say, the next move, you know, is going to have to be the right move for me and my family, obviously. But I have great belief in my own ability, in the staff that I'll build around me, that, you know, if any team that we go to, that we will be successful, because, you know, I seen, like, I don't want to stay here and say, oh, I seen what I did with that loan, with the girls at that loan. They were a fantastic bunch of players. And I want to thank them as well. Everyone that's from the start of the journey to the end. And I do, I really sincerely wish the girls and Kieran all the best of luck for the rest of the season. And I did say it before, you know, even in the dressing room to the girls, I really feel they can go unbeaten from now till the end of the season. I really believe that. Because there is some fantastic players in there, and hopefully they do that, and we'll be looking on. But yeah, and look, lastly, I'd like to say thanks to you guys, because you know, you've given us managers and players a platform to, now I won't say voice our opinions, but to come on and talk about this wonderful league. And you know, Breffin, you were in it when I suppose not so good times, and Aaron, you've obviously followed it way before I followed it. And you know, that day up in Shelburne when I walked away from you, you were kind enough to give me the space, and you understood how disappointed I was. And you know, and I suppose finally, I've met some great friends within the games, and the managers, James, Graham, Kinger, you know, them people have been, Billy Cleary, them people have been unbelievable support for me over the last 4 years. And even to this day, I'm still in contact with them all. And that's, to me, that speaks volumes.
Don't be giving Cleary credit like that. Tommy, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on over the last couple of years. Congrats on all the achievements, the cup final, the league title campaign last year. I know they ended in ultimately a disappointment, but they were over and above what was expected of you. So congratulations on all of that. And listen, I'm sure it won't be that long before we see you around the league again. Enjoy your brief mini retirement, shall we call it that?
Thanks, guys. Best of luck. Tommy. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Breffin, he won't say it, right? But I'll say it for him. Like, the job that he's done at Athlone, it's actually ridiculous to think how far he brought them along. Yeah, it didn't work. The end goal, he doesn't see the final journey. But to take them from where they were the first season in, then the improvements, and just to continue to go, like...
Absolutely.
There was nothing but credit for him.
100% agree with you. Now, I am looking, our two guests are in. We're going to take them in the order we had them in, so we're a little bit late coming in, but we're going to have Damien Locke from Kerry FC. We still, of course, have to talk all things last weekend's results, this weekend's fixtures, and, of course, that all-important World Cup squad. We'll be talking about that, hopefully all in the next 25-30 minutes or so. We've got an action-packed show, so we're going to start off by bringing in Damien Locke, who is the head of academy. We've caught him at an inopportune moment there, taking a drink, but it is what it is. Damien is the head of academy down in Kerry FC, who brilliantly announced yesterday that they are one of two new sides in the underage women's ranks in the League of Ireland. They're barely in the league a wet week. It's so good to see them stepping up to the women's side of it. Damien, first of all, you're very welcome to the show. It's great to have Kerry in the league.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, very exciting times. We've had a few phone calls over and back from America the last week or so, and it seems to be the case that we're not running before we walk, and we're actually flying before we walk, really, in some cases. But I think we just keep rolling with the ball now at the moment.
Yeah, the Kerry is fairly well established for having international players over the years. There's an abundance of female talent down there. I know Savannah McCarthy in the Irish ranks at the moment. She's obviously the Stoll native, I believe, from that neck of the woods. Even going back a decade or two, there's players, Casey O'Driscoll springs to mind as someone who, which may or may not be even on your radar. She's that long retired from the game, but she would have played for Ireland back in the day as well. Early noughties, I'm thinking specifically. So there's always been a long history of players coming out of the county, but from a Kerry point of view, how exciting is it to have a whole new set of players coming into the team next year, the club next year?
Yeah, that's it. And I suppose, look, probably just to give you some background, obviously, look, it is very exciting to see it happen, but like it's all kind of built on like great work that's kind of been done down here in local clubs over the last few years. And then I think that from being on the ground myself and seeing that happen, in particular with the FAI Centre of Excellence, where like there would have been an under 15 team there for 2-3 years, and last year they actually entered the younger group as well, so they have 13s and 15s in the Centre of Excellence, so the appetite for the game is definitely down here. And like you said, it's been the case for years where, like even previously, like before Savannah, there's another, like Geraldine O'Shea played as an international as well, but Savannah in particular would have had to leave Kerry maybe seeing her at the age of 9 and 10 playing for years, in amongst all the boys, and in some cases been better than all the lads as well she was playing against. But having to travel to the country, up to the Cork and Galway, and up and obviously up in Shamrock Rovers, and obviously she went further afield off to Scotland. But look, she's back now. She's settling in Dublin, doing really well at Rovers. But that's the, I suppose, we want to offer that to the girls down here, and hopefully we get the stage very quickly where we can offer that full pathway as well.
I guess the question is, though, we're coming into the men's first division this year, why next year? Why not further down the line? Why was it that it had to be now? Was it just the number of players that you couldn't miss out on?
Yeah. So, like, look, when I came into the club, it was at the back end of the licensing process, and I was aware that they had to show intent to join the Women's National League at some stage of the next 2 to 3 years. But like I kind of referred to there, that like from being on the ground myself and seeing the numbers playing the game in the schoolgirls league, and also in that centre of excellence, then like you also see those 2 or 3 girls now that are up around Munster playing in different clubs at the moment, and we're well aware of the girls that are up training there at the moment, up in Treaty also in Cork. So it's like seeing Fiona Bradley there, who's had to break onto the scene into Cork senior women's team, and another Kerry girl there, like, you know. We can't continue to, I suppose, yes, in one way lose them, but obviously it's great to see them go on and progress and continue their ambition. But look, it's something that we should be able to offer them, just as we offer the boys down here as well, in my opinion.
In terms of the plan going forward, obviously under-17 is great, but it's just the first step on the journey. Do you have a timeline in mind within the club as to how long it's going to be before we see maybe a 19s team or a senior team, or what's the trajectory of that?
Yeah, but I suppose the recruitment process there would probably tell a lot on that, because obviously next year's under-17s league would be made up of 07s, 08s and 09s. Look, ideally, like we're fairly strong with 07s and 08s, and then I would see that progress to 19s maybe the year after, to be honest. And they'll be not wrong with kind of intern somewhat of a young side into the 19s if we believe that we've recruited well this year. But obviously then the first team could be 3 or 4 years down the line then after that, but it's just a case we have to make sure that as long as we have the players here and they're of the capable of ability, we have to make sure we offer that to them. And it'll probably be the recruitment process at the beginning of every year that will probably dictate how fast that happens.
How important, though, is it for the region of Kerry? Because Kerry has always been a stronghold to Gaelic football. Like for yourself, being a soccer man from in the region, Gary O'Neill, as you say, Savannah McCarthy, the Dennehy brothers, there's lots of big high-profile soccer players that have come from it. So how important is it that, you know, with the female side, that you strengthen there and you get that base in quickly to allow you to grow?
Yeah, but look, I suppose it's just that one where, like, we can't, like girls from this county that are playing now and that are loving the game and are playing both codes or might be playing basketball also and other sports, like we can't be the ones not to offer that platform to them. Like for me in particular, you know what I mean? I support all sports, so I'll be supporting the Kerry footballers on the weekend. And it's just the case that, like, when it comes around to the girls side of the game, like, we can't always be the case that, right, we lose them at 16 or 17 to other sports, or maybe not playing sport at all. But as long as the 13 or 14 year olds coming through now see that they have that pathway, then the ambition might start for them. And look, I know the 13 Centre of Excellence is up in Cork today and they had a really positive result. So again, from that age, we're seeing massive strides within the game down here. But look, for me personally, then I'm kind of involved in, or I am involved in third level football, both men and women, for the last number of years. And from seeing what's happening with the girls' game up to the age of 16, and then by the time they come into me at 18 or 19 in the university, like, a lot of girls are kind of dropping off and they haven't played for 2 or 3 years, and that's a bridge that I also need to be part of. I can play a role in this now in bridging that gap. I think the women's football, obviously it's great that they can continue playing the game, but also look at opening our opportunities for girls to go and continue, maybe get scholarships into universities, and there are opportunities that will be there for the girls that play with Kerry.
In terms, I suppose, Damien, your own experience, obviously you've managed in the League of Ireland, you've been involved with football abroad as well. What has been the impact of Kerry coming into the league, and locally in terms of the supporter base and the youth football, juvenile football, junior football in the region, has there been a tangible boost to all of that?
Yeah, again, look, Tommy, look, I still honestly believe that the full pathway down here still needs to be merged a lot better than what it is. But look, as we start with our own club coming in at the age of under 14s, like we're in a really good position there now. There's good structures actually been put in place over the last 6 or 7 months where it finally looks like there is a full club down here with pathway boys playing 14s, playing up with 15s, 15s. We had two under 15s come on and score for the under 17s last weekend. Likewise, we had boys that were playing first team came down and played with the 19s. So there's a full pathway there now. And like that, all of that encompasses then is you've more families within the club, more clubs coming in supporting Kerry, all pulling in one direction. And initially, we've a camp this week, a summer camp this week down in Dingle. Like, so it's 90 kids have turned out on our first camp of the summer, and it's great to see that we have that support all around the county, not just in Tralee where we're based. But look, it's been really exciting time the last 6-7 months. It's gone really quickly. There's a lot of action going on. But look, like I said earlier, that we're just going to keep rolling with it now. Why things are going good. It's great to see all the girls that are in watching games on Friday night. So look, the appetite is definitely there.
Does the World Cup help as well when you're trying to attract them players, the young females of soccer?
Timing couldn't be better, to be fair.
One of the nicest Savannahs in the squad, though, in terms of having that local contact as well. But we can't have everything in life. In terms of, I suppose, what next? What are the stages? When can people in the locality expect to see, like, maybe opportunities to apply as coaches or to be involved as players or even as partners or sponsors to a new club like this? Who do they contact and when, maybe?
Yeah, no, so look, I'll be the point of contact and all that. And look, we're very happy. We've made two appointments already there and already. So we're just trying to tie up a few other bits. So over the next couple of weeks, we might have the management team in place, hopefully. Well, some of the management team in place, but players' assessments will start the beginning of August. And then look, we keep the girls in for a while. Look, we're well aware that we have... There's other girls up training and playing at other clubs at the moment that might not be available until the back end of the season.
We've lost them. We'll bring them back in now in a second. Sorry, we lost Damien. We unfortunately lost Damien's microphone. I don't know if he can hear us, but he's yapping away there. We might come back and see if we get that fixed. So not sure if he can hear us or not, but if we can maybe get him to just drop out of the call and come back in, it should reset the call. I'm not sure if we've dropped him because I think he's still talking with him in the background. Unfortunately, we've lost Damien. But if you could just drop out and come back in, Damien, we'll chat to you in just a moment. But anyway, we might just quickly touch on the Avenir stuff, see if Damien gets reconnected back onto the site there. Let me just bring up here. The Avenir Cup this weekend. Let's quickly run through the results and fixtures from last week, and then we just go back to Damien. If he does drop back in, just to finish that conversation. But if we look at the results from last weekend, scrolling across the bottom of the screen there, you'll see Shells 1, Linfield 1. I do have all the results here on a different screen. I might just bring it up. Wexford Utes 5, Shamrock Rovers 3. That'll be a nice one for our next guest, Alan Brown, to talk about just a couple of moments. Bowes 1, Cliftonville 2. Two goals in the second half from Cliftonville there. Set them on a train towards the top of the table. Galway United 0, Athlone Town 0, Treaty 1, Cork 3, DLR 3, Crusaders 1, Shells 1, Linfield 1, we gave it at the top of the list. IP Mount 0, Glentoran 5, a big last salvo for Glentoran, giving a 5-0 victory, and Sion Swifts over Sligo Rovers 1. We're going to go back to Damien. We'll come back to the results. No problem. These technical things always happen, Damien, but you were in the middle of an answer there to us. About the impact it's had locally.
Yeah, look, the interest already there. It's been phenomenal on the social media platforms over the last couple of days since the announcement, and there's been a few people reaching out, emails, getting involved. Is it possible for them to get involved in the management and coaching teams and stuff like that? So, look, all that process will begin very quickly, and like I said, we're happy with two of the appointments we've made already for the coaching staff. But look, the player assessments will begin in August, and we kick on then as we have preparation for the bones of 6 or 7 months before the season starts.
Yeah, it promises to be exciting times. Can you tell us who the appointments are? Are they public yet? Have they been announced?
Not public yet, no. So we'll announce the manager, yes. We'll announce the manager first.
Perfect. In terms of the the prognosis of women's football in the kingdom. It looks pretty healthy down there. It'd be nice to mirror the men in terms of the support. I know it's a relatively small stadium in League of Ireland terms, but it's been more or less sold out every single home men's game, which is phenomenal. And hopefully that carries through to the women's side of the house when they launch next year at under 17 level. But as we go forward, it's exciting to see where it might take us over the next few months and years. So, Damien, thanks for joining us. Apologies for the technical glitches, but I'm sure we'll be chatting to you and other members of the club over the coming months.
No problem, Bertie. Aaron, thanks for having me, guys.
It's great. Thanks.
Keep up the good work. Cheers, guys.
Damien Locke there from Kerry FC. We might just quickly go through the fixtures of last week, or the results of last week's...
We get Alan first, then we'll have loads of time to go through the fixtures after.
I'll give him. Alan Brown is patiently been waiting for us behind the scenes. Alan, you're very, very welcome to the show, although you've just frozen up on us now. The glitches are all over the place today. Alan, how are you? Can
good, you hear us? Hey, lads, how are you doing?
Good, you can hear us anyway.
I'm with your Wi-Fi,
but... Oh, listen, we've been having problems ourselves all afternoon and evening. In terms of the week that's in, I suppose, first of all, big result at the weekend, 5-3 winners against Shamrock Rovers. We might start with that one. What are your thoughts on that? You must be delighted.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the game prior to that up in Glentoran, we had a great... draw there, and Glentoran are a really good side, really aggressive side in fairness to play that football. So then to get Shamrock Rovers down to Ferry Carry and for us to go 5-1 up with 10 minutes to go, it was just a different performance from the girls. They just really wanted it, and I suppose a lot of results haven't went the way we wanted since the start of the season, and I suppose when that happens you have a choice, and the girls had the choice, you know. You can either just have a mundane match or you can maybe put it in and see what happens. In fairness, to put in a hell of a performance. So, look, we're not money proud for part it is. We're building, I suppose. Look, all you have to do is look back at the results. Look at our league position. This is a another competition. So it's another opportunity for us to get some performances and maybe get further in the competition than the group stages. So, look, it was a great result. There's no two ways about it. Something that we needed. And it'll only be good if we can kick on this weekend, you know. Again, Peas, you know, which is another test, you know. So,
yeah, you're breaking up us on that a little bit there, but we'll continue on. We'll plow on regardless. The reason we're here is not necessarily to talk about specific games, though. It's actually in terms of the overall picture of the club and the governance of the club, and it's a massive week for the club in terms of the announcement. We're going to see a brand new entity. With both men's and women's in it, Wexford FC will cater for both. It'll no longer be Wexford Youths. Why is this happening, and why is it happening now, I suppose, is the main question.
Yeah, well, I suppose Wexford Youths and Wexford FC, and formerly they're all called Wexford Youths, I suppose, prior to 2016. And then, I suppose, the men's side of the club had certain difficulties and they had to rebrand and change their name to Wexford FC, etc. So that was, I suppose, they had their own things going on back that time. So I came in 2017. Tom Ellis brought me in to look after the under-17 team, which was, that was the inaugural season of the under-17s, which has actually been very successful as a competition. And at that stage, I was manager of the 17s. And up to 2020, I was manager until I was chairman in 2020. And at that time, I suppose, the men were still obviously going through their issues that they had with rebranding, etc. And I suppose we thought at that time that we would set up a new committee from the women's side solely to concentrate on the women's side of the club and obviously let the men concentrate on the men's side of the club. So we did that from 2020 up to this year, I suppose. And I suppose now it seems right, the time it seems right that we join under one banner. I suppose there's been a change in structure and personnel in the men's side of the club. Tony Dyle has come in, John Godkin and Eileen and a few people have come in. And they have, I suppose, focused on certain things in the men's club. And we've come closer as an entity. The women's side, December last year, we started to work closely on committees and finance groups and different things like that. And so we got into the conversation then about, you know, would it be right? Would it be the time to come under one entity? And the answer was yes. We've been talking about it for 5 or 6 months. And now the time is right. We feel we've been through an awful lot of discussions and, I suppose, you know, parameters of how boat clubs would operate, etc. And so we're going in with no issue, no pressure, a stronger club as one entity under Wexford FC.
And how does that benefit, though, from a Wexford youth point of view, coming in to join with Wexford FC? Like, what sort of benefits will it give to the women's side that maybe they didn't have at the minute?
Well, I suppose, as you know, in every club, you only have the few who kind of run it.
Unfortunately, Alan's we're having Wi-Fi issues all over the place today. I think Alan may have dropped it. Oh, no, you're back. Sorry, you're back.
Oh, back, I'm back, yeah. So, I suppose that we kind of looked across the board and we said, well, if we did come together, how would the women benefit? So the women would benefit financially because the men are able to, I suppose, pull in.
No, we lost. Unfortunately, the Wi-Fi has just been letting us down today on a couple of our guests. So it's been that kind of a day, Aaron. And what we might do is, because I'd imagine Alan will come back into us, we might take a look at the... No, Alan is back. Let me just jump in here quickly. Alan, how are you? Welcome back. On a bit of a better connection now. Where are we? Nope.
But, yeah.
You gotta love when we do. Yeah. So anyway, you were telling us about the benefits for the club.
Yes. So I suppose look, the men can command additional revenue both from the FAI, the men's clubs, and local sponsorship, etc. So we're going to benefit from that. Also from the facilities, I suppose that the men and women would have used the same facilities, but they wouldn't have worked together to improve the facilities. So now that's really an aspect that we work together on. There's a gym down there in Ferry County that's now been done up into dressing rooms, etc. There's been a lot of work put in by everyone to kind of get the club, the facilities and the pitch and all up and running. And also that courses then, like obviously we benefit from the men from some courses and coaching. And so I suppose there's a lot, there's administration issues that, you know, we would benefit from the men now, I suppose, that they have different coaches in with, and obviously with the club license, and now you do need A license courses across the board and all. So when you add up all that together, as well as help with administration, and we have a combined commercial group set up now to kind of get fundraising. And if we find now that we're going to sponsors, and rather than saying we have the women's senior team or we have a number 17 girls team, between both clubs, you know, we have between 8 and 10 teams plus academies, 13s, 14s academies. So that's a bigger sell. It's a bigger brand. And it's also, it adheres to the wider audience that sponsors will look for. So, you know, it just made sense. And every other week, we're coming across stuff that we find out that does benefit. You know, we can do boys and girls camps then together, and we can intermingle coaches between both sides of the club who are maybe suited to different age groups, and there's more opportunities. So, I mean, really, the opportunity is endless. And we're only finding out the benefits. And that's the thing. It is a benefit. You know, it is a benefit.
I know, so, it's an exciting time. And, of course, all the branding and stuff that comes with that, going back, I suppose, the traditional pink, still a very big part of that branding. Going forward to Saturday, we might as well just, when we have you on the show, obviously, the chairman of the Wexford Youth Women as well, still going into that game at the weekend with a chance to be in that semi-final, looking to beat Piemont and hope that maybe Shamrock Rovers do your favour by taking a few goals at least off Glentoran, because it's goal difference could be the key decider on the day on Saturday.
Yes.
What's your thoughts?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Piemont, I suppose Piemont can't get through to the semi-final. And I mean, Shamrock Rovers, who are still in the hunt, and they are very well capable, you know, of taking points off Glentoran. So, look, we're just delighted with the last two performances compared to the, I suppose, some of the games we've had and the results over recent times. And, look, we're going up to Piemont. We have a shot, but it's on their home patch, so we know it's going to be difficult. But I can tell you we're really looking forward to it, because after this, whoever doesn't get through, I think we've 6 weeks until the World Cup, until the next league match. So we would like to try and put in a good performance, and hopefully, if results go our way, try and get into the semi-final would be great.
I won't ask names though, Alan. Are we any closer though to getting a new manager in Wexford? Obviously, names can't be given at this stage, but are we any closer down the line?
Unless you want to, we're taking a name.
take an exclusive. Look, there is a few people that we're talking to, obviously, and we're going to take our time. I mean, look, we were sorry to lose Stephen. Stephen's been with us 4 years, 2.5 years as manager. We won the Cup in 2021 with him. And look, it just didn't work out. You know, sometimes the dynamics in different situations just don't work out sometimes. So we're going to take our time. We're going to make sure that the person that comes in is the right person. Everyone's happy with him because we believe that, you know, we have a big say still in the rest of this season. So we want to make sure that the appointment is correct. So we are talking to a few people. We are somewhere along the negotiations, but it's not over. Or it's not done till it's done, I suppose, is the answer. So we are going the right direction.
Excellent. Well, listen, Alan, thanks for joining us. And we let you go because of technical difficulties, I'm sure, for our listeners and watchers are getting a little bit frustrating. So We let you go. But thank you very much. The best of luck, not just at the weekend, but also at the rest of the season.
Thanks, Alan.
Alan Brown there of Wexford News. Apologies for the technical glitches. Just the Wi-Fi connection seemed to be a little bit off, but you got the gist of what we were saying. And it's positive news. We're seeing more of these amalgamations of the women coming into the men's sporting sphere. And I think it's only, not only positive, but it's generally positive. I think there are some small negatives, but we might chat with them some other day.
I think that's down to now. Is it down to two clubs now that won't be amalgamated with a senior?
I think it's just DLR and Piemont are the only independent clubs now.
So it's good in that sense. But like as Alan said, like there's also options for UEFA funding and other types of funding that if you have the men's and women's team linked together, which could benefit both.
But that's not right. But as I know why it happens, and we might get into that maybe in one of the follow weeks after the World Cup before the games kind of kick back in again. But it's be careful what you wish for is all I'd say. I think it's overtly positive. 90-95% of it is fantastic. But I do think that there need to be safeguards put in place that ensure that the women's game is protected. And we saw in the Gaelic football world over the weekend where Camogues and ladies footballers took sit-down protest at the start of games. It looked a bit silly, but the point of it was well-founded, and I love the implementation of it, how they had like a player from each team intermingled with each player, the two squads together making this protest in a show of unity, and I think that was phenomenal. But they want a charter, and I think you need to be sure that the women's teams are protected because they can get eaten up in those particular deals. But the best of luck to Wexford, and hopefully I'm sure that the reasons for the timing of that, I think, is probably...
Just before we get... The Avenir Cup, just a reminder for listeners and probably a reminder for yourself. Champions League draws on this Friday.
Oh, of course, Shells will be in that from an Irish point of view. So interesting to see who they get. We might just take a quick look, if I can find it here, at the league tables from the Avenir Cup as they stand at the moment. So we have.
Do you know what? I actually enjoyed the Avenir Cup the weekend.
Oh, it's a really, really good competition. I'm really, really happy with it.
I got to watch Shells Linfield and Bowes Cliftonville. So, you know, getting out to watch two games, I actually really enjoyed it. And the funny thing is, I got sent a stat there on social media by somebody from, I think they deal with the Northern League quite a lot. But I think out of the games, I think they played six games or eight games between Cross Border. And the Northern Irish League have won four of them. The Women's Premier Division have won two, and there's been two draws. Interesting, because we sort of chatted a lot at the start. We didn't know how the dynamic was going to work, how the Northern teams, like I'd seen Linfield a couple of years ago. Like, the one thing I'll say about Linfield is they're very young, but they were very tenacious. Kerry Holloway up front for them was decent. They had some very, very good players, and to be honest with you, they deserved that draw against Shelbourne. Megan Smith-Lynn scoring directly from a free kick deep in the second half with like 9 minutes to go. Other than that, it would have been, you would have said they were testing Linfield, but they weren't necessarily putting under extreme pressures, and it would have been a massive win for Linfield. But like, I really, really enjoyed that one, and like it was a good performance from Linfield. Yes, they're out of the competition, but it just sets the marker for them to, as a young side, to where they want to go to.
Absolutely, yeah, Shells and then and Galway United top of the table. Of course, they face each other this weekend, so it's winner take all. If it's a draw, Shells do go through on goal difference. So Galway need a win. Anything else, see Shells into the group stages of the competition. But Galway with a victory last week, or with a draw against Athlone, they'll be disappointed not to put themselves in the driving seat with that particular game. They're going to fly through the games because we've just so much stuff on today. But if we look at the results across Group B, Glentoran and Wexford Youths both picking up big wins last week. Glentoran 5-0, four of them in the last 20 minutes, it has to be said. After Neil Reedburg picked up an injury and Pima made a raft of changes because they were effectively out of the competition, having lost to Rovers anyway.
I think they'll make a raft of changes again this weekend.
I think so, and that could be for Wexford's advantage. How much will Wexford regret those two late goals by Shamrock Rovers to kind of take the gloss off the score sheet from 5-1 to 5-3?
Yeah. Probably a little bit, and like if they win 5-1, they're only one goal behind Glentoran. Then going into the last round of games, where now they're completely different. And it's sort of the fact that they've also taken the result out of their hands a bit, because they're going to have to massively outmatch. But if Piemont do make the changes, then it's possible. But I wouldn't be surprised if Shamrock Rovers do actually pick up something. In that game, interestingly. That's the only game that's Sunday in the group. All the games aren't necessarily taking place at the same time either, which is quite confusing for a competition, especially because for example, if Wexford beat Piemont, Glentoran will know exactly what they need to do going into the last game. Like, I know it goes on head to head, then goal difference, but obviously Wexford and Glentoran draw with each other, so that means that goes to goal difference, and then it's a bit of a conundrum in that situation, and like. It's mad that they're not playing at the same time. But listen, as I say, I'm really enjoying the competition so far. I think a lot of teams are taking it quite serious, and that's the biggest thing for me. And to see the competitiveness of the Northern Irish teams as well is great, because I'd like to see this competition continue, maybe in a slightly different format going forward.
100%. There is no live stream of the game on Sunday, as far as I know. It's outside the FAI remit, but we will have live commentary, live text updates, and statistics updates here on Final Whistle on Sunday afternoon through that game, Glentoran versus Shamrock Rovers. All the other games, of course, on Saturday, spread through the afternoon. We'll put the fixtures up here in just a moment once we get through the groups. But we're looking at Cliftonville in Group C. It's very hard to see anything other than Cliftonville progressing through this. They face Sligo Rovers. There seems to be a bit of a gap in between the two sides, and barring an absolute miracle from Sligo Rovers pulling off a shock win, Sion Swifts and Bowles are literally just playing for second place in this group, which, of course,
definitely from a Bowles viewpoint, I know me and Dad missed a late penalty, right? Forget the penalty for a minute. Bowles should have been clear and comfortable in the first half. They had so much possession. They just struggled in the final third. They were all over them in the first half. It probably should have been 2 or 3 nil up at half time, and then you come out second half. Once Cliftonville got one, I sort of thought they were going to get a second, because it was difficult from a Bowles viewpoint. The second half was probably difficult for some of the fans to watch, because it wasn't great from the second half, where after dominating the first half, and then like with 20 minutes to go, I sort of thought it was only going to be Cliftonville who'd get the winner, you know, would win the game. And like so that's why I think from Bowles they'll be disappointed they weren't further ahead. And I totally agree with you. I think the Sion and Bowles game is just a game to see who finishes second.
Absolutely. Group D then, of course. Another set of interesting results over the weekend. I think Cork City's two wins back-to-back in this have really shown some of the good work that's gone in Cork. I think they'll be delighted with that. They have Crusader Strikers this weekend. It's going to be a tough ask. If they slip up, it gives DLR the chance, if they were to overcome Treaty. If Crusaders win by two clear goals, they'll go through on points difference or goals difference, probably. So everybody has something to play for here. Treaty, a bit of pride, but DLR and Crusaders, they'll be eager to maybe go out there. And who do you fancy coming through here? I know Crusaders are third in the table at the moment, but they're probably the team I fancy to do the job, if that makes sense.
I fancy Cork. I think they've got a little bit of momentum. I think they've got a couple of good results. The fact that they went to Treaty and got the win last week on the road as well, I think for them was quite a big result. And I'd fancy Cork to go up the north and get a result against Crusaders. And if you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I probably wouldn't have said that. I think in the other game, I wouldn't be at all surprised if it finishes nil all. The two games so far in the league have finished nil all. I wouldn't be shocked if it does it again. But I just fancy Cork to go and make a 3-0-3 and make the semi-final this week.
they were impressive last week against Tralee. Fiona Bradley scored after 12 minutes. Great opportunistic score after the ball seemed to have gone over her head. Christina Dring's goal, decent as well. A good assist from Bradley. Eva Mangan with a nice individual effort, lovely little skill, made a bit of space for herself and stuck in the bottom corner. But how much will they be kicking themselves for the clean sheet going? I don't think I got a chance to look back at the game. I flicked through the highlights of it myself today earlier, and the final goal, 4 minutes from time, Cork probably looking at the first clean sheet in a long time, and back pass, and Abby McCarthy, you can just see her lose her footing and just clambering over to the ball, just can't reach it. Michaela Coombs for her first senior goal is never going to get an easier tap in than that, but heartbreaking for Cork, albeit on the end of a 3-1 win, but still.
I expect Abby to bounce back from that. I've said on this show before, I think Abby's resilience is quite strong to actually bounce back from a mistake. And
it wasn't a mistake.
She was slipping, you know. You'd fancy her to bounce back and just put it behind her. But I think you're right. From if they'd have kept that clean sheet, it obviously given them a lot of confidence in the back. But I think the fact that they've played two games in this competition, conceded two goals and scored five, they'll have to be very happy with this. And they're going into the last game up to Crusaders with their destiny in their own hands. And I think if you'd offered Danny that at the start of this competition, he'd have said, yes, please, I'll take that, no problem. He'd have even been taken, probably coming in there, all three teams, maybe three or four teams, all level on points and be like, okay, we're still in a sniff. But to be actually going up there knowing that if they even just get a draw is enough to see them through.
Yeah, and even a defeat could still put them through, depending on how other teams do. In terms of the four who you think progress, who would you be putting your money on? Here's group one.
I see this one I don't know, because Shells haven't been amazing. I wouldn't be surprised if Galway topped this group, and because for Galway it's an opportunity to...
We are running out of time. We still haven't got to the World Cup, so I'm taking...
So I'll go Galway to top group A, I'll go Glentoran to top group B, Group C, I'll go Cliftonville, and Group D, I'll go Cork.
Excellent. That is our, for the time being, that's our Avenir Cup predictions for the weekend. Some exciting games. Do get out and watch them. All the fixtures have been going along the bottom here. All the Irish, the Republic of Ireland-based games will be on LOI TV. You can catch up with all the games here on Final Whistle as well. Even the Northern Ireland-based ones, we'll have updates on all of those games. Now, let's talk about the... We've 2 minutes to get under the hour. That's not
going
to happen.
We can. We're going on.
Our time is going over the hour.
We're going over.
Yeah, you've convinced me. But in terms of where we are, the story of the week, the story of the day, the World Cup squad announced this morning, we have so many players delighted to be in it. Couple of players who can genuinely feel good not to be in it. You might just talk us through the squad here quickly as we take a look at it on the screen.
Yeah, as you say, a couple who are probably a bit disappointed. The big one and the big two are probably Jamie Finn and Leanne Kiernan, who have been left out. Aoife Thompson left out due to injury, and Megan Campbell just didn't make it. They just both ran out of time. Aoife actually flew into Dublin the other day to try and have a conversation with Vera to try and prove that she was fit. But
I think you mean Aoife Mannion.
Aoife Mannion, sorry. The management just decided it was just too big of a risk. Some players probably lacking a little bit of game time. Not many people will know an awful lot about Sinead Farrelly. She come back to playing football after being out for 7 years. Is playing with Gotham in the NWSL, smashing player. I think from the squad, I think I predicted 21 or 23. The only two I didn't get was Leanne and Jamie being out. But like, there's players there. I think if you look at that side, you've got... So many have come through the National League over the years. Heather Payne, Anya Gorman, Louise Quinn, Diane Caldwell, Clara Reardon, Chloe Mustaki, Izzy Finnegan, Katie McCabe, Denise O'Sullivan, Kira Grant, even then Amber Barra, Abby Larkin up top. Two National League players in Anya and Abby. It's a mix of experience. There's a mix of players who have played in big competitions in terms of the clubs. The likes of Katie McCabe playing Champions League semi-final this year. The girls in America, like it's a how would you say it's a squad that's unfortunately only I will say that I'm not happy overly pleased. It's very midfield defense heavy. I thought there's not really many options. We know she's going to probably play 3-5-2 or something along them lines of Kira Caruso as the out and out hitter up top. But the talk of the big two left out. Good for Jamie Finn. I thought Jamie would have made it. Jamie's played six of the seven games to qualify for the World Cup. The only one she missed, she was suspended. I thought our post on social media today, classy as ever from Jamie, expecting nothing less from Jamie. Jamie's one of the nicest people you'll meet. I think Leanne Kiernan probably just ran out of time as well, as much as Vera said during today's press conference, that it was due to football fitness, but it's a difficult one. The squad are all in. There'll be a lot of, how would you say, some players will be a little bit downbeat because of their friends haven't made the squad, but they're going to have to pick themselves back up and really focus in, because a week's time, the French game is on. There's so much happening at the minute. The squad are all due to speak to the media tomorrow, have opportunities to speak to a couple of players tomorrow, really get and see how it was for them. But it's a difficult time. Glad it's announced, though, Breffni, for me. I know me and you have had little bits of conversations about when it should be announced. I'm glad it's done. I'm glad it's out of the way and everything is out. And I thought the video was good that they put out. Sky have put out a good commercial as well. I think the build-up is starting to build nicely. I know I'll probably say this on the show next week, but my only plea is, anybody who has tickets to the France game, please don't waste them. If you need to get rid of them, there's so many people looking for tickets. Please don't waste them and actually come and support the girls, because the last opportunity to see them before they fly out to Australia the day after.
Yeah, Izzy Atkinson, you mentioned about her, Isabel Finnegan, she hasn't quite managed to get her yet. You're all over the Women's National League players with the same first names today. In terms of, there's a couple things I want to ask you about. The first one being, I think Megan Campbell is another name who has run out of time injury-wise. She's been very unlucky with injury in recent years, and I think she'd be in that mix. Was she fully, fully fit? I think there's question marks over whether that has been the case or not. I want to ask you about the players who have effectively been parachuted into this squad in the last 6 months since qualification. I'm thinking specifically along the lines of Marisha Shiva, Sinead Farrelly. They're the ones that immediately spring to mind, but you could probably throw Sophie Whitehouse in there as well.
Deborah Delaherve, Aoife Mannion.
But they haven't been in the mix-up for the squad's choice. These girls have made the squad. They've replaced the likes of Jamie Finn, Leanne Kiernan. Should we have done that as a nation? Should we prioritise performance in this one particular tournament over the loyalty to the girls who got us here?
It's always difficult, Breffni. Like, my heart says I'd love Leanne and I'd love Jamie in, I think, you know, but I understand why they've sort of gone with bringing these players in. Like, the talk today from Vera was that Marisha and Sinead in particular had actually made intentions known before and had qualified for the World Cup. It was just, and they had passports before they'd actually made contact, so it wasn't the FAI getting them a passport. So it's a difficult one. She talked about also turning down other people as well, who she didn't feel that the love or the heart was in it for. Like, it's always going to be a difficult, like, listen, if Sinead and Marisha had played in the playoff, maybe we're having a different conversation. We're talking slightly different. But I get where people are coming from. I get where the cynics are coming from to be disappointed that players who have not, like, Sinead Farrelly is the easy target just for the fact that she's only played 60 minutes for Ireland in the first friendly against the USA. That's always going to be the easy target. But I think if you're talking about talent, there's no doubt that Sinead is a massively, massively talented player. And I think she will start the first game in Sydney. I think she'll start next Thursday against France as well. But I understand where people are coming from in terms of being unhappy that players being parachuted in. It's always a difficult one to find a fine balance and act. It's, how would you say, it's something that we see an awful lot in the women's game in general. So, like, if they're like, I you would hope that the core is going to be built around some of these players going forward, but it is a hard one to take for the likes of Jamie and Leanne, especially when you do see players coming in.
The FAI are bringing three spare players, effectively, players who aren't in the 23, but will be travelling for training purposes with the squad. First of all, is that a good idea? Is it worth the expense? And secondly, including a goalkeeper in that section, does that limit our options realistically? Because, and I don't want to get the question too long here, but realistically, we saw last week against Zambia, Vera doesn't appear to trust her backup goalkeepers. What's the point in having a fourth one if you don't even trust the second?
So I'll come in on this one, because this was the question that this was asked today. So I'll start with your first question. Is it a value to bring the players? So the main reason they're saying they're bringing them is A, to have players to train, and B, if someone gets injured before the tournament, you're not flying someone on the other side of the world. England are bringing two. England are bringing two outfield players, same way to it. So they'll be pretty much part of the squad, but they won't be part of the match day squad. They'll do everything else with the squad. They'll be involved in everything else the whole way through, but they won't actually be part of the match day squad itself. They can't be brought in after the 19th. The option of bringing a fourth goalkeeper was one that was probably a surprise to a lot of people. She was asked about it today. She talked about the idea of having the fourth goalkeeper there as well for the likes of a 7v7 games and wanting to play small-sided games and stuff like that. I don't agree with it. I realistically don't think, because if you've got to have a third goalkeeper on the bench and the goalkeeper gets injured, for example, if you have to name an outfielder just as a goalkeeper for a game, and while someone flies, people to do the chances of two goalkeepers getting injured on the night are very, very slim. And it's one that she was pressed on quite a bit today about that. Like, she said that if they weren't allowed to bring traveling training players, she would have had another goalkeeper in the country on standby. She would have brought a goalkeeper and had them in the country on standby anyway. So
should we just listen to Vera talk about it and then we can kind of jump back in a minute? You sent a video earlier from today. We might just play it now if you think that's going to work.
Yeah, sure.
Good. Let's hear what Vera had to say when Aaron and others questioned her as part of the pool interview this morning in UCD.
From your point of view.
Sorry?
Talk to us about the squad from your point of view.
Devastating days, because it's not so much celebrating the squad, it's more the pain that we all feel of leaving players home. We have done everything in our capacity to go through everything, every single detail to come to the decisions that we had to make. I've told you already before that every week we went through all the players, all the games, every moment of every player we've seen that they have played. And that came to that we gave a few players extra chances. Said every player get the chance till the last second. And that's exactly what we did. On Monday night, we finished at 1 a.m. We said, guys, we need to sleep now because the tiredness came in too much. 8 a.m. we're here again, get a few hours of sleep. From that moment, we went into the training. After the training, we've seen the video again to give every single player, especially the hardest decisions, to view that again. We are convinced that we made the right decision, although they've been very, very hard.
In terms of the squad itself, when did you settle on it? Was it just before you told the players, or, you know, because you said you come back together, did it take you long when you come back together the next morning to sort of decide that was it? The next morning when you come back together,
yeah,
as a management group, when did you decide that that was your 23? Was it a couple of hours later? How long more deliberation did you spend?
Of course, we have been growing to the 23. But the final decision has been made after the training, after we've seen the video, and that we said we have to take this decision. There's no other way. That's technically, and that's elite sport, but it doesn't mean that it's a broken dreams.
Delivering.
It's so hard for them because that World Cup will never come back.
What was it like, though, delivering that news, delivering the message to the players that weren't in the squad?
Let me really say it's for them the hardest. We had to go through this, it was difficult.
In terms of the squad, there's a couple of players who we knew that were potentially had injuries. Liam Kiernan and Jamie Finn are probably the two players that a lot of people expected to be in there. Jamie haven't played every game bar this Slovakia qualifier away. Can you talk a little bit about the decision maybe to leave them two out?
Yeah, let's go for Jamie, because Jamie, that has been the hardest. That's been the hardest decision. And of course we know that. She's been part of that squad all the time. But you've also noticed that we've changed playing system. We have Kira Kurusa now as a target player that brought Heather Payne to the right side with pace over the wing. And there's also players who jumped up levels, who showed against Zambia. You've seen them yourself. So that's, those options bring that you have to take tough decisions. And Jamie, especially because she played and the credits that she has, we've gone through every single really a moment of her. Also the last 2 weeks. So it's not just a moment, but you've seen also that Jamie was not involved in the last few games. And that's technical, it's not because of her. That is team sport, that is elite sport, that's football. As much as we wanted her to be part of it. So I'm so happy that she's still part of our squad, that she's traveling with us, that she will be, together with Harriet Scott, full member of the squad at every moment. I've had contact yesterday, 3 times with FIFA, to make sure that everything is arranged for them, and the way how to handle it, and that they are aware that we bring those players, that they are full part of the squad. So we really take care of that, because it's so important that, that Jamie and Harriet are involved.
What about Leanne, Vera?
Leanne, it's unfortunately the football fitness that is a part of that. We all know that she played only 30 minutes in a year, then 45 minutes now, in September, it's a year ago. And we have given her the chance to fully train, to be with us, and she did well. She did really, really well. But the data show that the time between explosive actions are already getting longer during the first half. And that means that if other players are performing at a higher level, that technically you have to take that decision, because it's World Cup level. It's even twice as high level than what we met against Zambia. So we have to take the decision on that. But it has nothing to do with if she didn't give her all, or that we did not give her all the chances, because we did. We brought her in, she grew and she grew. It's just a little bit too early, unfortunately.
Can I ask about the 4 goalkeeper decision as well? That Sophie is travelling as a training player.
Yeah.
Is that for training purposes?
You have the rules and regulations are that you have to have 3 goalkeepers on the team sheet. So if there's a goalkeeper match day -1 getting injured, we do not have 3 goalkeepers on the team sheet. So we have to bring an extra goalkeeper as a training player. And if we would not have that decision from FIFA to be able to bring training players, we would have brought a goalkeeper anyway, but then not part of the squad, to be there in Australia. Because you cannot fly in a goalkeeper at the last moment. If the World Cup would have been in Europe, we can fly in a goalkeeper, but not in Australia. There's another issue. When we're there, we must play 7-a-side to be ready for the next game. So you have, at training purposes, you have to have 4 goalkeepers.
Bit strange, you must play 7-a-side. Don't know if you must play 7-a-side. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with 6. But we heard her in her own words there talk about the extra goalkeeper. What's your thoughts?
The 7-a-side thing first. Surely the goalkeeper coach can stand between the goals if you need someone to stand between the nets. Yeah, it's a strange one, but when it started to break yesterday that she was bringing 4 goalkeepers, I was a little bit surprised. And the end of the day, the only thing I will say is Vera will never surprise anyone. You know, she'll always sometimes pull the little rabbit out of the hat at the last minute.
Speaking of rabbits out of hats at the last minute, we all knew the squad yesterday. It was announced officially this morning, but it broke in various media yesterday evening. How concerning is it that we have leaks within, I'm going to say, the whole system? Because we don't know where it came from. It could have come from a structural player. It could have come from a coach. It could have come from a family member of a squad player. But the surprises, for want of a better word, were well out in the open by 5 or 6 o'clock yesterday. Then.
The only thing I'll say is it put the FAI announcement video to shred. Because that announcement video, if nothing gets out, is great. But because everybody knows what's happening, you see the top guy, the top journalist. Listen, the only thing I will say, the top journalists are doing their job. If they're getting the start, if they're getting the names, they're doing their job. But I just think the way it's a problem when you have them all in camp as well. Stuff is always going to get out. That's the problem. And things are always going to get out. And people are always going to get the information. Like it's a difficult one, because you'd love to sort of ramp up and not know anything, ramp up to the, or even, you know, see the video come out and be like, oh, this player's in. But the talk last night on social media was all about Jamie, Aoife, Leanne and Megan. Whereas it was slightly, it took away from the announcement coming. I feel definitely it took away from the announcement, because you were sort of going to this, you were going to the announcement today, sort of knowing the players already.
Yeah, the one that caught me, not by surprise, I'm surprised she was included, but I think she's definitely worth her place, because to me she was the most impressive of the, let's call them the question marks in the Zambia game, was Izzy Atkinson. She just seemed to have a little bit of extra, just a little level above of the other people who are on the fringes of the squad, and I think she nailed her place down in that. And for considering she wasn't in the original 31 woman squad, it does show that maybe the 23 weren't set in stone, or that she's just on such form that she couldn't be left out.
A couple of things on this. The fact that when the open training session happened, we were told she was only still a training player, she wasn't in the squad. She's definitely done something in that week, because Vera's not picking her solely based off 45 minutes. Like, let's be honest, I don't think anybody had a massive performance against Zambia in the first half. I thought Ireland were poor in the first half against Zambia. But for her to have picked her, she has to have shown a lot more between them 2 weeks that they've had in camp. But the only thing I will say from that point of view is that, like, it'd be nice for them to say Izzy's actually part of the squad previous and just say she's there, she is part of selection. But fair play to her, you know, she's gone in, she's taken her chance, she's jumped at it with both hands. In terms of what you're saying about the squad, I would have said probably about 18 are probably set in stone before the Zambia, 18 or 19 are probably set in stone before the Zambia game. I'd have thought Clara Reardon was probably teetering on the cut line. I think Amber Barrett was safe, but some people said she may not have been, but I think she was safe. But there was a couple that probably they were getting that chance to impress, and they were getting that last opportunity. But I definitely think about 18 would have been set in stone.
Yeah, interesting times ahead for all those teams. If we take another look back at the squad, do you want to pick an 11 from that on the fly? No pressure or anything.
Okay. So the 11, I think, will start the first game. Will be Courtney Brosnan, Heather Payne, Niamh Fahey, Louise Quinn, and Megan Connolly will be. And then you'll have Katie as the left wing back. Midfield three then will be probably Denise. I think Lily will play, and I also think Sinead Farrelly will play in midfield. And then what's that? That leaves us with two, I think, Kira Caruso and Marissa Shavers, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're not going to be too far wrong with that squad 11 when we roll out to play Australia in a couple of weeks' time. But, of course, we do have that match against France next week. That's going to be a big game as well. We'll be with you before that game takes place. We'll have another episode of the podcast on Wednesday before that goes to the starting whistle in Tallaght Stadium next Thursday. You already have put out a plea, but I'll repeat it. If you have a ticket, do go to the game. If you don't have a ticket and you want one, keep an eye on social media, but also watch the game, support the girls. We're going to have a very exciting 6 weeks ahead, maybe longer, hopefully longer, but at least 6 weeks ahead for the women's game in this country. And we can
22 days, Breffni. 22 days. 22 days till the opening day.
You're counting down to, you know, because you've got the fights booked. Right? Stop rubbing it in. But listen, a completely action-packed show today. We're going to call it there. Thank you so much to Damien Locke of Kerry FC, who joined there. The new girls on the block, they'll be joining with Mayo FC. They'll be joining the Women's Under-17 League next year. We also heard from Alan Brown, who is the chairperson of Wexford Youths Women's FC. They're, of course, merging fully into the structures down there of Wexford FC, and a whole new entity to be created down there, which encompasses both sides of the game in the county, which is phenomenal. And of course, to former Athlone Town manager Tommy Hewitt, who joined us a little bit guarded about the reasons for leaving. Maybe we'll hear more about that in due course. But I think a huge success over the 2.5 years he's been involved with the team. Maybe 3.5 years actually he's been involved with the team. And I think it's big things ahead for for that club. And I don't think we've seen the last Tommy Hewitt in the league either. I think you don't go from being the best manager in the league last year to being kicked out this year. But being departed, never to be seen again. I think we'll see plenty of Tommy before his career and the Women's National League is over. Aaron, that's it for the week. What have we got to look forward to in the next 7 days? Obviously, the Avenir Cup games at the weekend, but from an Ireland point of view, as we build up to the World Cup.
So we've got tomorrow, we've got a media day where all players will be available for 45 minutes for small interviews. Then other than that, then it's on to match day minus one next Wednesday. Unfortunately, I won't make that. And then Thursday's game, and that's it. They fly off to Australia next Friday.
Yeah, so you're going to speed dating a couple of the Irish players tomorrow morning to get their thoughts and ideas before they partake on the journey that's ahead of them over the next few weeks and months. Aaron, thanks again for the week. We will be back next week with another show detailing everything that's happening in the Women's National League and, of course, the Women's National Team as we prepare for the World Cup. Talk to you then.